Good morning, everybody. First of all, a big thank you for actually making it. 8:15 on a Friday straight after the after party is no mean feat, and I saw the tweets were still coming through at 4 in the morning, so if any of those were you, well done. All right, so let's take a look at VDI, Virtual Desktop Infrastructure in Windows Server 2012. So straight up, how I want to approach this. What I'm not going to talk about is the compete story. So I'm not going to talk about how other competitor products compare with what's now on offer in Server 2012, mostly because I'm not really across what they do. But also what I really want to get across is what you get out of the box from Server 2012, because it's changed dramatically. Did anyone ever do VDI in Server 2008 R2? Anyone? Four. It's more than I thought. As you're aware, it's quite possible. I heard someone from Microsoft describe it as, yes, you can do it, and you get a manual which tells you how to do it, which is so big you could beat a whale to death with it. It brought together a lot of disparate technologies that were, yeah, they could work together. It doesn't mean that they were necessarily best in breed for doing so. All of that has now completely changed in Server 2012. And out of the box, it is a really, really good administrative experience and a very powerful one, very easy to implement. So I want to look very, very quickly at some of the changes within Server 2012 which make it possible. I know you've all been Server 2012'd out, so I'm not going to spend too much time on that. We'll take a look at the new specialist roles and deployments that actually make VDI possible. Look at VDI collections, which is what your users are actually connecting to. Look at some of the various properties, how they all come together. We'll take a look at how VDI and remote app work together, and we'll also take a nice look at user profile disks because they rock, quite frankly. But before we do any of that, let's actually connect to a VDI session. Because there's nothing better at 8:15 on a Friday morning than connecting to live infrastructure in another state. All right, so this is essentially just my web access portal back in the office in Melbourne. So that's all running on Server 2012. Looks very similar, as you know. Interestingly, you can apparently do some work to customize this in terms internally to SharePoint, which is rather cool, which I haven't mucked around with. So I'll log on to that. And I've got access to... Hey, what happened there? Okay. I've got access to a couple of things. I've got my applications, and I've also got an enterprise pool of VDIs. So I'm just going to connect to this one. It's all SSL encrypted all the way through. I've done a bit of a kludge job just to make sure that it actually works, but I will get prompted a few times. So what it's doing is it's going through. Yep. CRL check. So it's going through, connecting through to the remote session, and it also does a bandwidth check to see what the connection speed is actually like. I know from bitter experience that from anywhere except within the office, it's terrible, because it's about a 1 meg uplink, but you'd be surprised what you can do on a 1 meg uplink. And bang, we're logged in. So this is actually streaming out a full native 1080p screen. It's running Windows 8 Enterprise x64, and I've got Office 2013 installed too. So fire up Excel, and yeah, it's done. Bounce out to the standard desktop, fire up the preview, and we're done. So as far as, and it's done a little check, it reckons the connection info is good. Yeah, not bad. So as far as what you actually access, it's just a full Windows experience in the back end. This particular VDI, though, is also running RemoteFX. So there's a graphics card in the host, which is then providing a virtual GPU into the VDI session as well, which means it should be able to do, and this isn't going to work very well, but that's okay. It's going to be fun anyway, just to say I've done it. You know what's coming, don't you? come on, got to do it. So what's probably going to occur, okay, so what's actually occurring is that at this point the video is buffering not as well, obviously. So there's flash redirection, which is actually occurring in the back end. That is running off flash. Okay, so it's using adaptive graphics to try and work out how much bandwidth it needs to process the video side of things. The audio is actually streaming fine. So it's using a separate codec, and that's pretty good. Now, obviously, it's out of whack. It's not that terrific. I can prove the point with something that is a bit more optimized. So I've got here is just some public videos, and so this is 720p WMV. This, I promise you, will struggle.
Miles above the Rocky Mountains,
warm, but the audio is still not bad. Rises. Now, obviously, the frame rates are struggling, but because it's a WMV, it's supported for native optimization. Now, look, that's coming off a 1 meg link, so it's never going to be amazing. The fact that it's working at all, in fact, which it's not. I might not worry about that. That's just embarrassing. But funnily enough, with only a little bit more bandwidth, not all that much, you get a full, rich experience, and a 720p video will actually stream quite happily. On a video which is not using an optimized codec, so say you grab something that's in MP4, it's not as efficient at handling it. It still does a pretty good job. What I've seen it do, especially say on a wireless network where it's the bandwidth is kind of dropping up and down a bit. If it's non-optimized, it starts off at maximum resolution. It goes, yeah, okay, sure, let's just stream it. And then it says, oh, okay, there's actually not enough bandwidth. So I'm actually going to work out how much bandwidth is actually available and just drop the resolution down. It does that on the fly. And it actually does a pretty good job. Now, obviously, on a 1 meg uplink, it's never going to do that much. But on a basic wireless enterprise connection, so wireless G, not even in, I've been able to get a full 1080p screen and a 720p video maximized, dropping no frames. It does a very, very good job. So not every scenario you're going to be wanting your users to access this kind of infrastructure remotely, even though it works and it works fine. Maybe you're going to want to have some mobile users who need to be able to have a slate, jump out, move around, connecting through to a full BDI. As long as they're on your enterprise network, even if it's on wireless, that's totally fine. The experience is very, very good. Ben Armstrong, who I hope you've attended his stuff, he's extremely good, has been bragging about his 20 meg synchronous fiber uplink to his home. But what he does, he's got this running at home, as you do. So he's at work, working on his work, and then VDIs back into his system at home with remote effects and plays games. And the throughput is more than adequate, and that's about 20 meg, I think. So you don't need all that much for it to be a really good user experience. Now, there are some smarts that are going on under the hood. I might leave that one open. I've also got a number of applications where I'm not necessarily interested in a full VDI experience. I just want access to an app. This is where it's going to take its sweet time because I'm already remoted in. Come on, you can do it. Maybe you can't. Demo fail. I mean, unscheduled learning opportunity. Oh, I hate you. That's all right. I've put this machine through quite a lot over the past couple of days, and it's finally decided that, you know what? No, get stuffed. That's all right. I'll come back to you. Essentially, what these These are just published applications. So same principle in the back end, applications installed upon a VDI, but just the applications themselves are published. So similar to remote app running off remote desktop services, the exception being is that at the back end you have a full VM. So you have dedicated resources to make it all possible. Especially useful if you want to run something with a bit more graphic intensity. If your users are running sort of low power ultrabooks or slates now, but they need to be able to access something that's a little bit more beefy, you can give them that ability. So. So the main changes in 2012 that make all this possible and make it a very easy administrative experience. First one is a new server manager, being able to jump out into your infrastructure, grab lots and lots of servers together, and have it work out what roles are available and administer multiple servers all from the same console. It's very similar to the way that file services are run in 2012, where it's not just a case of, yeah, you bring all your servers together and it makes them easier to manage. As with file services, if you want to be able to do certain things like spin up storage pools or RAID or redundancy, you have to have multiple servers working together. VDI is exactly the same. You must have servers working together. It's not just an administrative nicety. SMB3, the ability to now attach virtual hard disks or machine configs to SMB shares is a critical part of VDI. It's what makes user profile disks possible. I'll go into that in a bit more depth soon. But the resilience under the hood means that this simply can't be done in Server 2008 R2. And it's indicative of the fact that in a VDI infrastructure for Server 2012, every single server that plays a role must be running Server 2012. So let's say you've got a remote desktop gateway already, but that's on 2008 R2. You cannot use that to jump into a Server 2012 VDI infrastructure. It won't work. All the remote FX changes have had a major, major overhaul. So obviously it's now optimized for WAN, maybe not the kind of WAN which I was offering it. But it now finally works over WAN, and it works over WAN properly. It figures out the bandwidth. It scales it, appropriately. It adjusts itself on the fly. That was not possible in 2008 R2, where if you wanted remote FX, it was LAN only, and even then it was wired LAN. All that's changed. The adaptive graphics, again, it works out how much bandwidth is there. It also works out exactly what is being shown on screen. So let's say you fire up a web page. It's about 60% text and the rest is media. It's going to work out, okay, well, I need to optimize the text in a certain way. I need to optimize the media in another way. It can work that out on the fly. And you also get quite nice USB redirection now. So when you are remoted in, users can still make use of locally attached devices. There's a good TechNet blog post by one of the product team looking at all the various types that they officially support. So the obvious stuff like printers and flash drives, but also iPhones, BlackBerries, all that stuff, it works fine. You can also do a lot of PowerShell scripting behind it to configure exactly what device types, what hardware types your users will be allowed to attach and what they won't be. So the roles and the properties, it's similar in concept to what we already have in 2008 R2. So it's similar to RDS. So the basic ones are still there. ID gateway, connection broker, web access, and a licensing server, they're all there. They have to be running Server 2012. So if you've already got a licensing server on 2008 R2, sorry, you're going to need to move it across. But there is a new role, which is the RD virtualization host. This is a physical server running Hyper-V on Server 2012. And what we essentially do is we bring all these servers together in Server Manager and then do a deployment across them. So we don't go through and simply install a virtualization host role on one and then a gateway service on another. It leverages off that very powerful ability that Server Manager now has to make multiple changes all at once. So it generates a deployment and pushes that out across a wide variety of servers, however many are needed. And it's an interesting indication that if you happen to remove one of those servers from Server Manager, everything still works, but you can no longer manage your VDI deployment. All those servers must be there, must be present for it to work. So let's take a look at how all that comes together. So, this is my environment at work, and I've just got two servers that are running this. This bottom one here is the one we're remoted into at the moment, so that's the virtualization host. That's just, what's that? That's a ProLiant G6. It's nothing special. Actually, the first time I set this up as a proof of concept, it was running on a couple of Dell Optiplexes 990s. And it actually ran really rather well. Because Server 2012 will run on just about anything and it scales all the way down, it's very easy to spin up a POC just on any old hardware that you've got lying around. Obviously, it's not going to scale, but it will definitely work. And that one on top of it is a VM that runs on that host. That's the gateway, the connection broker, licensing server. Now, because I've got those servers working together, what I can then do in Server Manager is go Manage, Add Roles and Features, and instead of a role-based, I'm doing a remote desktop services installation. I'm going to jump out and find if there's an existing connection broker, which there is. A standard deployment just lets you bounce through it, and it's nice and easy. A quick start, you only need one server. It installs everything, and everything is rapidly provisioned. Now, I've already got this up and operational, so I won't step all the way through. As you can see, the virtual machine-based deployment is not available because I've already got one. Essentially, I've already got one on those servers. If I wanted to bring in more servers, I could potentially do another one. That's okay, but at the moment, based on what I have, my only options are for a session-based one, which is standard RDS, but on Server 2012. So I don't want to do that. But once it's all done, you get remote desktop services. I'll zoom out so you can see the full glory of it. But you only get this once all the roles are installed and Server Manager has figured out where everything is and it brings it all together and lets you manage it as one coherent unit. And this is the overview of how all those things fit together. So I don't actually have a licensing server here, but I've got web access server, a gateway server, the connection broker we can now make highly available if we want to. So it's not just the case that it can load balance itself, it can become highly available. Essentially, you simply point it at a SQL server, and you can then spin up multiple connection brokers. They talk to each other, sync appropriately. If one of them drops off, machines just revert to the next one. So actually, we go configure high availability just to show what we need: a SQL server, native client, static IP, and DNS, and that's about it. Just followed the bouncing ball. Yes. I don't have a session host server, but I do have a virtualization host. And I've got a couple of VDI collections underneath that. Over here, it shows you which service is running which. And from a management perspective, that's actually kind of it. So, obviously there's more to it, but to bring it all together, it's simply a case of have a server, do a wizard, you now have a deployment. Well done. You can obviously make a number of changes, so you do a number of things like which is the gateway that you want to use, obviously SSL certs and everything come into it, so you do need either a PKI infrastructure or you can use self-signing certs, but then you have to publish those self-signing certs out so that your clients know how to connect securely. And SSL is a must, got to use it. I don't have any licensing. I do have a web access server, all good. Which certs am I using? Yep, they're all in, they're all trusted. What's going on in AD? It understands enough about the AD environment so that when you spin up new VDIs, it knows exactly whereabouts in AD to put them. It's not really configured here, but we'll go through it in more depth. So jump out and look at the servers. It's the fairly standard view that I'm sure you've seen many, many times. And finally, we've got some collections. So here I've got two types that are ready to go. They're both managed pools. One of them, actually no, they are both managed pools. But what we'll do as part of this, which given the time that it takes to do it, I might even kick it off now. So there are a couple of collection types. I'll go into them in more depth. My original plan was to go through the slides, set the context, and then kick off a deployment. But because of what it's doing under the hood, and also the fact that it's not really optimized hardware, so the copy process and spinning up is a little bit slower than I'd like it to be, rather than risk it not being done by the time we wrap up, I'll kick it off now and then go through the slides in a bit more depth. So I'll bounce through the wizard a little bit. So what I want to do is create a new collection. So create virtual desktop collection. It just runs through and lets you know what it is that you need. It's generally a case of you need a standard Hyper-V implementation, you need AD up and operational, you need to know where everything is going to go. You also need a virtual machine to use as a template. So we'll go through, let's call this TechEd VDI demo. I will leave this one as pooled. You can do it as virtual. I'll go through the differences in more detail. The basic difference is that pooled, you just connect through to a pool. You don't know which one that you get. You don't have administrative rights. When you log off, it rolls back. If it's a persistent one, when you log on, it's allocated to you. You get local administrative rights, and when you log off and log on again, you get that same one again. Okay, so it's allocated. For this one, I'll do pooled. Now it's going to go through and look at all the VMs which are available on the virtualization host. It picks this one down here, which is nice, that's the one I wanted. If I were to choose one of these other ones, I'll say no, it's already assigned. Now, this isn't like the VDI stuff that you had to do in 2008 R2, where the template you used was probably like a parent disk and you spun up a load of differencing disks. And it wasn't simply a case of that parent disk is locked. It's a case of it's locked and you can't touch it, otherwise you will break every single machine that talks to it. It's not like that in 2012. The template or the reference VM is locked to the collection, but you can still manipulate it, which means that you can update it, and then at a later stage, you say, all right, I've gone and made changes, I've done some patching, I've added some applications, now I want all these VMs to be rebuilt. Okay, so you can still work with it. It's a really good opportunity for hooking it up to Config Manager 2012. Because you can automate the entire process. Now, if I had a sysprep answer file, I'd throw it in there. I haven't got one, so it'll just go through the wizard. So this is for when it spins up a VM based on the template. The VM has been sysprepped, so it's going to go through that plug-and-play process, enumeration process, and work out exactly where in AD it's going to go. That's where I want it to be. Into VDI workstations. Next. I need an AD user group that has access. So I've already got one. Take a demo. I'll just create one. I'll give it a prefix, TEAU dash text. So this is essentially confirming where's it going to go, how much memory is already available, process and so on. So you've got a bit of an idea of where all this stuff is going to go. If you had multiple virtualization hosts, it would automatically balance them across each host. So if I wanted to spin up four VMs and I had two hosts, it would automatically put two on each, depending on the amount of load. So if they were relatively even, that's what it would do. Otherwise, it would actually say, all right, well, maybe three on one and one on the other. It works that out on the fly, very similar to the weighting system used in VMM. So essentially saying, on each virtualization host server, where do you want to store these VMs? Note, we can store them on a network share or onto a clustered shared volume. So SMB3 Joy coming into play. So it doesn't have to be local. You could have a virtualization host with plenty of RAM and CPU and absolutely no storage, and just a really big pool of SMB3 attached storage, and just use that instead. But I do want to put it there. So let me just jump out so I know exactly where I want it to go. MVDI. And note, that's where it goes on each host. So if you've got multiple hosts, you can't make a distinction between I want it here on one and there on the other. It's got to be the same on both. I can have a separate path if I want to put the parent disk somewhere else. And this one is a nice one, automatically roll back. What that means is that when the VM is built, spun up, joined to the domain, it then gets shut down and a snapshot gets taken of it at that point in time. When the user logs off, that snapshot is automatically applied. So the VM rolls back. So in a pool, it means that the user essentially cannot make changes to the VM, regardless of what they do, it's always going to roll back. Yes, that also means they lose all their stuff, but we've got a way of getting around that, which is user profile disks. These are really cool. Going into more depth, but they're going to go into a particular location, which is here. It's on an SMB share. It's a file server that's running 2012. Just drops into there. Yes. And create. What that's essentially doing at the moment is now exporting the template I pointed it to initially. And bearing in mind, it checks at that point, even though it wasn't obvious, it checks that the VM had been sysprepped properly. If it had not been, it would have thrown up an error at that point and say, you can't use this VM. So we'll let that do its thing. And I'll kick back. Before we carry on, any questions on what we've seen? Are you awake? You are? Excellent. All right, so as we saw, each VDI collection is created from a VM template, and it's per collection, okay? So each collection has a reference VM. That VM can be stored pretty much anywhere. It doesn't even need to be on the host. It can be somewhere else, as long as it's part of that deployment, and as a general rule, it never gets used. It gets used when the collection is initially built or when it's refreshed. It can be pooled or persistent. That has certain implications, which I'll cover in more depth. General rule is, one's a pool, one is allocated to you. Each collection can either be used for remote desktop or for remote app, not both. So when you enable remote app publishing from BDI, that turns off remote desktop at that point. It's also very, very scalable. As you saw, we only generated one VM BM, that's fine. But what we can do at a later stage is jump in and say, actually now I want 10. And you don't need to go through that entire process all over again. It knows everything and you don't need to go through the wizard. You just say, I want another 10. And you go, all right, fine. Spins them all up. So pool versus persistent. Pool gives you the options to roll back on log out. That's that nice snapshotting where it automatically reverts. You get to refresh the VMs. So you can update the template, do patch management, install new applications, give it more functionality, more RAM, add in a RemoteFX GPU, more cores, whatever you want. And then when you're ready, you say, okay, now I want to rebuild all of the VMs. You can do that on a schedule. So you can say, right, at 8 p.m. Tonight, I want everyone kicked off, and I'm going to reimage. I'm going to rebuild. Or you can say, as each user logs off, rebuild that VM. Or if you're feeling particularly nasty, you can kick everyone off then and there. They also give you the option for user profile disks, which is what you would need to implement. It's not your only option, obviously. What it enables you to do is to make sure that when your users log on, regardless of which VM they're logging onto in the pool, they get all their data. But it's a local profile, so you're not having to do anything like roaming profiles or folder redirection. Everything is just done under the hood for you. Okay. But the limitation is that it's for that collection, just for that collection. So if you want a user consistency across multiple collections or across their actual machine plus VDI as well, you're looking at a third party, either going back to roaming profiles, which no one really wants to do anymore, or you're looking at something maybe like user experience virtualization, which does the settings but not the data, or something like AppSense. Your other option, of course, is persistent VDIs. So that is a permanent user assignment. You get one that's allocated to you. You get local administrative access. You can make whatever changes you wish. And the administrator can't come back at a later stage and say, all right, now we're just going to, I've done some patching now. So you essentially have to manage these as if they were machines in your fleet, because that's what they are now. User profile disks. User profile disks are really, really fun. So it's essentially, as I mentioned, it's a way to make sure that regardless of which pooled VM your users log on to, all their settings, all their data, everything comes with them. The way it does that is to basically slipstream a VHDX in under the hood as a SCSI disk. The user is completely oblivious to its presence and not aware of it. Everything just looks local. It's C, users, username. Everything's the same. But their entire profile is pushed out onto that. And that exists on a file share somewhere else, highly available, wherever you want it to be. That's where it goes. But as I said, it's unique per collection. So if that user has access to multiple collections, the settings from collection one don't come through into number two. So you need to look at something else. But you get that out of the box. And it's very seamless, very, very fast. The user is totally oblivious. Remote app, we're barreling through here, okay. Remote app is the other alternative. So as mentioned, each collection can either be remote desktop or remote app. With remote app, it's a similar experience. You spin up a number of VMs. You then reference one of those and say, all right, enumerate all the applications that you have installed, and I'll go through and tick the ones I'm particularly interested in. So I've done this across Windows 8. It doesn't enumerate the Metro apps, so you can't stream out those. It's classic desktop apps only at this point in time, which is a shame, but oh. All right, so let's take a look at those collections in a bit more depth. Before we do, anybody any questions? Doing okay? Yes, sir.
Can you specify other directories in those user profile disks, other than
those? So the question is, can you specify other directories other than other than what comes across in the user profile disk. I'll show you that exact same thing. It's designed just to do the profile. You can be picky within the profile, so you don't have to bring everything across, but you can't say, all right, I want to bring across the entire profile plus a data folder somewhere else. It doesn't do that. It's just for the profile. All right, so this is going through and being created. Very nice. So the collections that we've got here are quite similar to each other, but this is a good one to go with. So this is the enterprise one, which I connected through to earlier on. So if we take a look at the properties of this one. So now the very nice thing about this infrastructure is that the entire thing is done via PowerShell, all of it. So I think I've only maybe found one or two little obscure things which don't have a commandlet. The remote desktop module pretty much contains absolutely everything. So check out the ISA on Server 2012. It's all there, but you can spin up an entire collection, configure it, reference everything just via script. You don't need to go into the GUI at all. So it's got a common name, that's what everyone sees. It's got an ID, which is what it tends to use for management. Description if you want it. Is it available in web access? Yes, no. What type is it? It's a managed pool. How many are in there at the moment? Or two. Easy to change. This is just the unattend stuff that we referenced earlier on. Notice that once it's in there, you can't change it. Some things you can change, other ones that you can't. So if you suddenly discover that you don't really want them in that particular OU, you either need to find an external way to move them out of there, or you need to rebuild the collection. I never said it was bulletproof, just awesome. Where does the template get exported to? There, and what's the machine name of each VM that gets spun up? Which user group has access, or which multiple user groups? So this is the client stuff. So this is essentially where you can look at what you want to be able to redirect. At the moment, I've got pretty much everything. Note that you can change those. So if you need to dial it back, it'll do multi-monitor as well. So that tends to be more of ability of RemoteFX. RemoteFX in 2012. So I've got these ones doing it at a maximum, I think, of 1920 by 1200. It'll go up to, I think, 2560 by whatever the other one is per monitor. It'll then bounce out across multi-monitors as well. I think up to four per VM. Obviously, you need some seriously good GPU in order to make that possible. And user profile disks. Now, again, you can go back and turn these off if you want to. So this essentially says where they are, and you can change that location. Can't change the size. But this is where you can get to be choosy about what you want to bring across or not. So the default is that it just brings everything. All the settings, everything to do with the profile, all the IE stuff, all the data, absolutely everything. But you can do some exclusions if that's what you want to do. So you do a relative location where you can say, all right, I'll redirect everything, but if someone goes and drops in a gig of MP3s, they're not coming across. You can also, instead of doing everything and then excluding, you could then say, actually, I'm only interested in certain folders. So the contacts are maybe not really relevant. I don't really care about their music. It isn't really relevant anyway. So you can strip stuff out and then include folders instead. So everything is geared around the profile, nothing external to that, but you can get pretty finely grained in what you do or don't bring over. All right. Now, the VM that these are attached to is that one in there. It doesn't recognize the fact that it's running dynamic memory. it does have a GPU. If I wanted to make some changes into that, so I want the start memory to be more, I don't want it to have a virtual GPU anymore, edit some number of cores, that's fine. Do all of that in Hyper-V. There it is. Or via PowerShell. Actually, just noticed that that is up and running. It's doing stuff at the moment. So these are my reference ones. These are one of the pools which I was connecting to earlier. Note it's got that automated snapshot that it's been taken and that it automatically rolls back and back and applies. Now, what I want to show you, because it is cool, is exactly how the user profile disks work. So I'm not remoted onto any of these at the moment. At least it shouldn't think that I am. All right, so on each of them, we should have just a single hard drive, which we do. So I'll jump back into remote access. Oh, this has been spun up already. Actually, let's just log into this one then. So it's going to initiate, secure it, and then do a bandwidth check. See how much bandwidth it's got to play with. The VM might be in a saved state, which it will do automatically for the most part. If it is in a saved state, the user does actually say, all right, I'm now waking up the VM. So they are aware of it. Oh, you know what? That's all right. I did put in a group policy to stop that hideously annoying welcome animation, which you get on Windows 8 Enterprise. It takes about 2 minutes. When you do a lot of deployment, you find that group policy setting really fast. That's horrendous. All right, so it's logging me on for the first time. This is actually using the same reference VHD type that I was using for the other ones. So it's Windows 8 Enterprise patched, Office 2013 patched. And I'm in. Very nice. Now, if I jump out to the desktop and take a look in Windows Explorer, I've only got one local hard drive. I do also have redirection occurring on my local drive, so I can browse those if I need to. Tried this earlier on. If you plug in a USB, locally picks it up and publishes that as a drive within about 2 or 3 seconds. Pretty good, pretty resilient. So I've only got the one, but if I go into management, jump into Disk Manager, I've got another hard drive there. I don't think I can zoom in on this. No, I can't. All right, that says user disk. It's online, it's ready to go. It doesn't have a drive letter. If I jump out and take a look at that particular VM, which is here, don't do that. You can see it's now got, under the SCSI controller, it's now got a new disk that's been slipstreamed in under the hood. So I'm just going to have to bounce around a little bit. All right. And that is running off an SMB share. Now, that happened during logon. I wasn't aware of it. The logon wasn't that slow, considering it was a machine that's only just been built and no one's ever logged onto it. It just slid straight under the hood. My entire profile has been redirected. Obviously, it's not a great test because if I put stuff in there, I've only got one other, I've only got that same VM to log back into. But from a user experience and from an administrative experience, it's bulletproof. Just set it all up initially and it just keeps working. I'll open this up to connect, so it'll show you, hopefully it won't do the same irritating thing when I log off here. So go through and sign out. And what, don't do that. It's gonna do that. Anyway, so you see it automatically, it picked up the fact that I logged off, it automatically reverted to the original snapshot. So if I had done something a bit silly, if I'd found myself with a bit too much access and I'd gone through and done some funny stuff, it doesn't matter. All of it's rolled back. So again, from an administrative experience, it makes managing pooled VDIs much, much easier because the entire user experience is totally abstracted and your users pretty much can't bugger it up because it automatically rolls it back to when it was all nice and safe and fresh. So was there a question over here? All right. Yes, sir. So if you allow multiple sessions.
Yeah. So if you open two PDI sessions for one user, does it work with personal PDIs?
So the question is if you one user logging onto multiple sessions, is that okay? In different collections? Yeah, sure, that's fine. Because you're going in through the one point through the RDA gateway via the connection broker, or maybe not through the gateway if you're internal, but you're going through the broker, and when you are going through separate collections, you're going to separate resources. So the infrastructure that supports them is completely independent of each other anyway. So that's fine. If you were to log on again to the same one, it's going to log you off the one that you're already on. It's like a concurrent session. All right. Now, this other collection I've got running here, these are my apps. So, So, for each of these, sorry to keep jumping around. So, I've got a couple of options here under task, which is publish or unpublish remote app. If I were to say unpublish, at that point, it's going to flush all those applications in that list and then re-enable the collection for remote desktop. But I'm going to lose all that. But what we can do is say, all right, I actually want to publish some. So point to a VM, which is in this collection. It can be anyone, it's fine. And just hit next. If the machine is in a save state, it's going to fire it up so that it can start talking to it. But it's going to connect through to the hard drive and just do an enumeration of everything that's installed that it can publish. So as mentioned, no Metro stuff. It can take a while, so this is maybe not the best thing to show. Has anybody got a convenient question? Yes, sir. Okay, so the question is if you have users maxing out the number of VMs that you have available, does it dynamically grow? No, it doesn't. So when the next user goes to log on, depending on whether it's pooled or persistent, not if it's persistent, but if it's pooled, it'll either try to kick someone else off or it'll say, no, you just need to wait. This is actually something that we've developed internally, where the functionality is really, really good, but for a scenario like that, which is more of a business case, you want your users to be able to log on. And that's fine. So what we can do instead is do some smarts between service manager and orchestrator talking to this. So we can do something along the lines of, all right, how many users are supposed to have access to that particular collection? All right, well, they have to be in the AD group anyway. So we can enumerate the number of users in that. We can then compare it to the number of VMs which are available. And we can say, all right, well, there's 5 in the AD group, but there's only 4 in the collection. Spin up another one. But that request, often it comes through IT, fair enough, but it's probably going to be a contractor or someone who's coming in maybe to finance or to HR to help out with end of year stuff. So it's not going to be persistent, but also you're probably not the one who really needs to worry about it. So you do it in Service Manager and have a nice little a web form where the PA or the chief accountant or whoever it is can say, all right, I've got someone coming in, they start here, they end there, do they need a VDI session? Yes, Windows 7, Windows 8, go. Goes through Orchestrator, talks to that, you don't get involved. So that level of smarts needs some extra third-party help, but it's perfectly achievable given that the entire thing is exposed. And if you also link in VMM and some of the other Service Manager stuff, you can also charge that back to whoever's asking for it too. And this doesn't want to populate, so thank you. Oh, here we go, it did. How about that? All right. Damn, why do you do that? Occasionally it does, occasionally it does not. Anyway, I know that's a little bit tricky to see, I'm sorry. But essentially what it's done, it's jumped out and it's found all the locally installed software packages. It knows exactly where each one of them is because the VDIs, because the VMs which are in there are exactly the same as each other, then those file paths are going to be exactly the same regardless of which VM you hit as a user. So what we'll do is, let's say we'll publish InfoPath Designer. There we go. You can add it. So if there's one in there that it didn't find and that you know ought to be there, you can hit it directly. Or maybe it's something that doesn't have an MSI code or a detection code or something along those lines. Yep, that's what we want. Publish that. Done. InfoPath Designer, it's available in web access. So if I jump back out, take a look in applications. He says, desperately hoping that it does something. How about I log out and do that again? Yeah, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't put it into applications, so it's there. So, in theory, this time, come on, you can do it. You know you can. Imagine a session where this actually worked, and what you're seeing now is InfoPath Designer, and you'll go, ooh. Feel free, thank you. All right, I've bollocked up the connectivity just a bit. It's probably the fact that I'm logged onto that box via the same gateway that this one is then trying to go through. And it's something about the way those two applications interact with the remote desktop client that's not happy. Whatever. It worked before you all came in. You should have been here. It was great. Anyway, essentially what it does, it just publishes the application itself. Okay, so it streams it out. It does all the back-end rendering on the VM and then publishes it out. The responsiveness is generally pretty damn good because even on a slow link like the one I have, it's just the application shell. Okay, so everything is just done in the back end. It's nice and easy. So the user experience is generally really, really good. There seems to be, I think, a bit of a bug if the VM you're connecting to publish applications has a RemoteFX graphics card. I found that actually didn't work. It tried to connect and then it just bombed it and dropped it. I ran that one past the product team. They said, no, it should actually work, but. So yeah, they're taking a look at that. But as a general rule, unless you're trying to publish stuff out like AutoCAD or Photoshop, which now I think about it, are actually probably a good reason to publish it out, A dedicated GPU is probably not going to be that valuable to you anyway. And if you want to have your users using stuff like that on the fly, a full VDI session that they log on to is probably going to be a better choice anyway. In the past, when I've hit this particular demo glitch, it's generally been solved by jumping into the back end, doing a save state on the VMs in that collection, and then allowing them to spin up again. As I said, it's not an optimized environment. It's a single server with serial ATA disks on a low speed connection. So in many ways, it's kind of more impressive that it works at all. So if you think about what you would do at an enterprise scale with good bandwidth and excellent servers, this thing is just going to rock. It's really, really nice. It scales beautifully. So we can jump back to our slides. I don't have much more to show you. We are going to wrap up quite quickly. In fact, we have wrapped up. So thank you for sitting through it. You've all done very, very well, given the early start, and I'm sure you're all up very, very late. That's my contact information, email, Twitter, and my blog. So if anybody's got any questions or there's stuff you want to see, please let me know. More than happy to have an offline chat. Do your evals and you go into the drawer. You may buy yourself some false hope with every eval that you do, that you may walk away with a Scotland. No, that's terrible. They're really cool, so do your evals. They're awesome. All of these are being recorded. They're going up onto Channel 9. I did Tech Ed New Zealand last week, and most of those are already up, so it's pretty rapid. Keep an eye on it in the next week or two. It all should be there. And thank you, guys. Thank you very much.